And you're listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM here in Storrs. I am Fran Storch, and I'll be here with you for the next hour with my co-host, Ron Meniza. And we've got great information for you, and we would love to hear from you. If you'd like to call in and contribute to the conversation, the number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can text at that same number, 860-486-9487. You can also write me, email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com, and I will see it in my inbox, and I will be able to answer your questions. So we'd love to hear from you. We would like to answer questions that you're interested in. In the meantime, I'll talk about stuff that's interesting to me and that's going on in the world. Now, it looks like there was a study that was just published in the British Medical Journal that says that high levels of physical activity can reduce the risk for five major diseases, including type 2 diabetes. And this was published August 9th in the British Medical Journal, and the lead researcher was Dr. Q, PhD of the University of Washington in Seattle, and his colleagues. I'm assuming that it's a guy, and it could be a woman. I'm not sure. Anyway, this is a meta-analysis that comprised 174 studies and over 149 million person years of follow-up. So it said that the more total regular daily physical activity one engages in, which includes recreation, transportation, occupational activity, and/or daily chores. So it doesn't even matter how you move. It's the more you move, the lower your risks for five diseases. And here are the diseases: breast cancer, colon cancer, diabetes, ischemic heart disease, and ischemic stroke. So what's ischemic heart disease? Ischemic heart disease simply means, the word ischemia means a reduction in oxygenation to a tissue, which can lead to tissue death, but it does lead to at least temporary dysfunction of the tissue. When you have ischemic heart disease, that means you'll get that if you have coronary artery disease. That is the arteries that feed, that are the circulation supply to the heart. When those arteries get blocked, you can get ischemia. And ischemia is usually thought of as a temporary condition. So you get temporary blockages in oxygenation to the tissue, which eventually can lead to tissue damage. And when you have permanent damage to the tissue, that is called an infarction. So you can have small infarctions that interfere less with the functioning of the heart or the brain. And you can also get injuries that lead to permanent infarctions, that lead to permanent damage to the tissue. So you can get ischemia in the heart, and you can get ischemia in the brain, and that would be ischemic stroke. Ischemic stroke is where you so a stroke is really an infarction in the brain. And when they say ischemic stroke, it's a stroke that results from blockage of arteries, of key arteries to the brain, that then prevents oxygenation to tissues in the brain, and then you get tissue death in the brain. And so breast cancer, colon cancer, diabetes, ischemic heart disease, and ischemic stroke. You only see significant reductions in these conditions when the total activity levels are higher than the minimum 600 metabolic equivalent minutes per week recommended. So the World Health Organization recommends that you do 600 METs. That's metabolic equivalents. That is 150 minutes a week or of brisk walking, or 75 minutes a week of running. And so here's the thing. The risk of the five conditions drops significantly with an increase in MET minutes per week from 600 to 3,000 to 4,000, with less additive benefit seen among that level. So 600 times 5, right, is 3,000. So 3,000 divided by 600. Let's see. So that would be the same as 30 divided by 6. So we're talking about 5 times 150. Do your math quick. What's 5 times 150?
Oh, don't do this to me. Really? Yeah, you're going to put me on the spot just like that?
I mean, pull
just like that?
Pull out your calculator. What's 5 times 150? Because that's how many minutes a week you... If you've exercised 5 times 150 minutes per week...
650?
Is that right?
750.
Right. Yeah. 750 minutes. So
that's
how,
in my head. So you, I may be
what's
wrong.
What's that in hours?
Fact checking.
Now divide that by 60.
Oh, hang on.
750 divided by 60. Come on. You can do it.
Oh, well, I have to pull up a calculator.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
So 750.
750 divided by 60 is, no.
12.5.
That's what I got. No. 12 hours a week.
12 hours a week of doing what?
Actually moving. Anything. Any kind of movement at all.
Okay.
So it includes chores and it includes walking
sure.
from in the grocery store.
That's not,
and
that's not unreasonable.
So
is that unreasonable?
Yeah. Well, when you think about when you put it in terms of exercise, so I don't even know if I'm exercising 12 hours a week. I might be. I mean, like my actual official workouts.
Yeah.
I might be.
Well, you know, I exercise, you know, right now I'm somewhere between 10 and 12 hours a week. That's basically what it comes down to. Between
right.
teaching fitness classes and riding outside, I'm looking at about that much time. And, but, you know, I walked over here from the parking garage.
That's right.
I'm going to walk back.
Yes.
Okay. So there's going to be that involved. I walk during my day for my job.
Yeah.
I'm easily putting in, this would be interesting to you know, I'm going to have to log this now because I'm very interested in finding out. I'm sure that I put in at least another 3 or 4 hours of activity.
Well, you do your Apple Health and it's counting your steps. You just have to keep your phone
yeah,
on you.
Yeah, you got to keep your phone with you all the time.
Yeah,
for
that's right.
Yeah, but
which I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do that. I have the Pacer app.
Right. Or you could use like a Fitbit or one of those
yes,
things.
Yes. Anything that tracks your steps. Well, Fitbit certainly tracks your activity. But you know, for me, I'm doing the actual formal physical activity. At, plus, I'm also recording with the pedometer.
But that's doing steps, not hours. Right?
It tells you hours.
It'll tell you hours.
Oh, sure. Pedometer. Any pedometer you get will tell you hours, it will tell you distance, and it will tell you steps.
Now
tell you
my,
all of that.
Yeah, my curiosity.
Yeah, it's any pedometer. That Pacer app tells you that. Your Apple Health tells you that. Yeah. But this says 3,000 to 4,000. That's so much. It's 12 hours. But that means you have to be moving for 12 hours. And so if you have a job where you sit a lot, you may not be getting that. And for me, I'm fortunate enough that during the course of my day, when I'm seeing patients, I'm up and down. So that up and down technically counts. So this includes all of your activity. It means if you're doing the laundry, that counts. If you're taking out the garbage, it counts.
If you're getting up from the couch to go grab a beer and go sit back down again.
It kind of counts, yes. And if you keep your phone on you, those steps get counted. And, you know, if you have your Fitbit, if you're wearing your Fitbit, that counts, that gets counted too. But that's 750 minutes of activity. So if you want to do that, it's really worthwhile to make sure you move. Like you probably, if you have a job where you sit a lot, it really behooves you to get physical activity. And again, this is saying 750 minutes a week. How can you do that? You don't necessarily have to go home and exercise at the end of a long day. This includes, so if you decide that instead of emailing your colleague who's two floors down, you're going to go downstairs and talk to them, that counts. If you're going to walk over to the copier, that counts. I mean, if you're counting your steps get counted when you do that. You know, you can have a little pedometer, a little dedicated pedometer. You can have a Fitbit. You can have an app on your phone. However you want to do it, you can count that, and you'll find out that maybe you're getting more activity than you think. And because the activity does not have to be done in bolus doses, it doesn't have to be done all at the same time, you can fit little bits of it into the day, and it counts. Okay, so if you go for a 10-minute walk at 9 a.m., it counts the same as a 12-minute walk at noon. So feel free to add little bits of exercise through the day. If you have a 5-minute, you can take a 5-minute break at your desk and do a bunch of squats. That's what one of the things I tried to creatively talk to people about. Don't feel like you have to go home and like after your long day and your kids in a commute, that you have to, it may not work for you to then get on the treadmill at 9 o'clock at night. Probably isn't gonna. However, it may work for you to do 5 minutes of exercise many times during the day. So feel free to do random bursts of exercise. And you know what? If you have an app on you or you have a Fitbit on you, it's going to count. It'll count it for you. And then you'll have the satisfaction of knowing that that's adding up over the day. And the more that you add it up, know that you are affecting these particular diseases. So I can tell you how that's happening. The more activity you get, you have to spend time getting enough activity to increase your circulation. So so here we go. So this is how this happens. For number one, breast cancer, right? How is all that physical activity going to affect breast cancer? Real simple. You're getting lots of physical activity. Do you have an idea? Would you like to hazard a guess?
Well, I would hazard a guess at being that if you're doing physical activity, you're doing positive benefits for your immune system, which is going to help you with any kind of a disease or illness or problem in the future.
That's true. Now, of course, if you over-exercise, your immune system gets suppressed. If you have do too much cardio, you have too much cortisol, and it actually suppresses your immune system. But within there is a sweet spot where you, as you said, because when you do exercise, you actually produce some beneficial inflammation. So, and the inflammation is occurring because you're taxing your muscles, and your muscles have to repair after that happens. And so inflammation occurs so that you get, if you're going to get muscle hypertrophy, muscle growth and increase in muscle cells, you have to have some beneficial inflammation around. That means there's going to be more active white blood cells supporting that. Those active white blood cells happen to be hanging around, and there's more of them, and they're going to be looking around, and a virus floats by, a cold virus floats by, they're going to eat it. So when you get exercise, you increase your white blood cell activity, and they start munching on viruses. If you get too much exercise, that produces stress. And so cortisol, just like when you take catabolic steroids like prednisone, when you're in a sweet spot of them, they support your immune system and they support energy. When you have too much of them, they suppress the immune system. So, you know, you triathletes, you iron people, you're going to have more immune issues than your people who do interval training and get proper rest.
I actually have a little sidebar on that, because when I was running really competitively many years ago, I found that I was always kind of on the edge of not being healthy. In other words, I would find, you know, just little, I'd get a cold really easily, or I would, you know, I'd find my sinuses were much more sensitive, different things like that, because I was pushing the limits. I was running pretty thin at that time, lighter than I am right now.
Where was I at that time?
You weren't around at that time.
So gluten.
It was also the gluten days. Yes, absolutely. And it was before Fran, so it was BF.
BF and it was BGF.
Yeah. Yes. And BGF. Yes.
So you had you had chronic inflammation and poor absorption at that time as well.
That's probably that just quite true.
Eating the gluten.
Yes. And so I was always, you know, the harder I pushed myself, the more sensitive I was to being ill.
Yes. Well, and there's other reasons for that too. Again, that suppression of the immune system suppresses the levels of white blood cells you're going to have and the activity of those white blood cells. And you're going to be, so if those white cells, blood cells aren't around and a virus comes by, it's going to be able to take over and it's going to be able to multiply before the immune system gets a handle on it. And that's one of the reasons we supply people with glutamine, people who are heavy athletes. Glutamine is an amino acid that can prevent illness in people who exercise a lot. And it's so, you know, if you can have a protein shake at the end of your workout, it's a good idea to have glutamine in that.
And you put a little
in that protein
in
shake.
Yeah.
And I have a supplement that has actual glutamine as part of it. And it's a good idea if what I like to do with glutamine is the longer my workout has been, the more glutamine I'll put into it. Mm-hmm. And so if you take glutamine regularly, it can help your immune system. But what the best thing to support your immune system is, guess what?
Sleep.
Yeah, rest.
Yeah, there you go.
Rest of all sorts. I'm a
big fan
of the rest.
Why does that keep popping up all of a sudden? That yeah. seems to be, maybe it's not all of a sudden. Maybe it's no. something that's been popping up for years and we're no. just not paying attention.
And I just know that I need more of it.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not, I know that me, Fran, I'm not getting enough of it. And I really do well when I get more rest. Rest is good. And I'm pretty good at lying about. It's just a matter of having days that are too packed.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And this is what happens when you run a business.
So there's another interesting segue on this, too, because we're talking about this whole thing with athletes and all. And I was talking to a person at the community center this morning who had just come back from his morning run. And he's a regular runner in the area. He spends a lot of time running. And he had come back from a run, and I said, so how was your run this morning? And he said, you know, it's all right. And I said, that didn't sound very encouraging. I didn't feel, you know, just some days you have a good day. He said, you know what it's like, Ron. He goes, you used to run a lot. He said, some days you feel really good, some days you don't. I said, what'd you do yesterday? Well, yesterday I did, you know, and it was like this aggressive workout with some hard repeats on the workout and all. And then I said, so what'd you do today? Well, I had to run, you know, I had to run like 7 or 8 miles today. And I just looked at him. I shook my head. I said, why? Why'd you do that? Well, you know, people in the area are telling me that this is a program that works and it's worked well for me in the past. And, you know, so it's kept me pretty fit and pretty competitive. And so I feel good about it. And I said, if your body tells you to rest, you got to rest, man. And I said, so he said, yeah, I know. I keep reading about, you know, how I have to go for these really, really slow runs because I just really have a hard time with it. I said, so don't run. I said, walk. Oh, yeah, maybe I should do that. And I said, yeah, well, let's consider that. You know, let's just walk instead. And then I asked him, do you use a heart rate monitor? And he said, well, I had one, but it broke. And I said, well, I think it's time to, you know, maybe look into that. Because
did you tell him about the bug-bitingly slow ride?
I told him about embarrassingly slow rides, yes. But you know, I know you don't like that.
I don't like the term embarrassingly. I think we should reframe that and call it proudly slow rides.
Okay. All right.
I think I should start Strava-ing those and showing, look at my ride. I went 10 miles an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Try to beat my slow ride.
Right.
See if you can go slower on your slow ride than I did on my slow ride.
Yeah, right.
There you go. That'd
yeah.
be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You know, people don't understand, you know, what rest is all about, even
yeah.
when they're, you know, athletes. They just don't understand that easy day has just got to be so easy. He said, you know, when I get done, I'm supposed to feel invigorated by this, by going out for something really slow like this. And I said, do you feel invigorated? He said, no, I feel kind of tired. I said, you didn't go slow enough. He said, I really can't go that slow. And I said, yes, you can. Just walk.
Yeah.
He said, or maybe I should do nothing. And I said, well, that's another idea.
You can do nothing.
You
do something else you're not as good at, so you have to do it easy. So maybe if you're not that great of a swimmer, go for an easy swim. Or go to yoga class and go to a gentle yoga class. Or,
yeah. Find something non-competitive to do.
Really? A good thing?
And this is a toughie for those type A's. We know.
It's a really good thing. Again, leisure walking in nature is really good for you.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, you just go for a walk. You look at the bugs. You look at the trees. You look at the flowers. You look what's growing. You look at those few trees that are starting to turn color now.
No, not yet. Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah.
No. Don't tell them.
I know.
It's because we don't have enough moisture.
Yeah,
I'll blame it on that.
That's not going to be true for the next couple days.
I know. Well, that's good. We need the moisture. We need a good soak.
I got up to do my interval workout this morning, and I was kitted up, and I walked outside earlier, and I think I have a window of time.
No, you didn't.
And I didn't, and so they were very nice at cardio.
Yeah, that's good.
Real nice over there. Yeah. really grateful to have a lovely indoor space. And let me repeat my rule of where you need to have your exercise situations. You need to have 3 exercise situations available to you. You need something you can do inside your home, like a DVD, a piece of apparatus, a set of exercises that you like to do inside your home.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have something you like to do outdoors. Could be anything. Could be walking, biking, running, swimming. You could have a set of weights that you use outside. You could throw a frisbee around. Doesn't matter. Something you like to do outdoors. And you need to have something you can do indoors, but not in your house, because sometimes your house isn't available, or sometimes you need to get outside, or sometimes what you need to do isn't in your house.
Right. You need some extra equipment or whatever.
Yes.
Right.
So have something you can do that's at indoors, but not your house.
You can do an awful lot at your house, though.
You can. It's all true. And so, but sometimes people, when they're in their house, they procrastinate because they're like, oh, I need to clean out this closet. Oh, I need to clean out this desk. Oh, I need, and then it doesn't happen. So that's why having, if you show up at a gym, you're going to work out, you know, so because that's, there's nothing else for you to do there. Whereas if you're in your house, you're much more likely to procrastinate. And sometimes you're not. I mean, I'm very good about if I have to do my half hour weight workout, I'll do it in the house because I have a routine, and so I am inclined to do it there. And that workout I like to do in the house. Okay, so getting back to these illnesses, how can all this physical activity lower your risk for breast cancer? So breast cancer, it's pretty simple. So breast cancer tends to be stimulated. First of all, once you have cancer, cancer happens because of genes that get flipped on. There are genes that get flipped on, so you get metaplasia, then dysplasia, and then you get dysplasia so far that you get cancer. That means changes in cells such that the cells are de-differentiated away from the tissue from which they arose. Now, extra hormones and hormone-like substances can stimulate breast tissue, which is sensitive to estrogen and other hormones, to overgrow and grow in a bad direction. And so generally, real bioidentical estrogen, I mean, there's thought that bioidentical estrogen in too much exposure to it can cause cancer, and there's some evidence to support that. But I don't think it's as much bioidentical estrogen as xenoestrogens. So xeno is a word that means foreign. So it's substances in the environment that behave like estrogen. They bond to estrogen receptors, but they aren't estrogen. So you're talking about dioxins and PCBs and BPE, those, you know, that plastic that lines that they're trying to get rid of, that are BPA that line the inside of a plastic bottle of cans and also plastic bottles. Mm. So those things stimulate estrogen receptors. And when you get overstimulation of estrogen receptors, you can get excessive tissue growth. And when you get xenoestrogens, they'll bond to the receptors, but then they can't be broken down. And sometimes they can't be separated from the cell, whereas estrogen can bond and unbond and bond and unbond. When you get exercise, the big thing that happens when you exercise is you increase your circulation, and you're increasing your circulation so that it's rotating through the liver and kidneys many more times than it would if you were sitting still all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big deal, and that is probably the mechanism of action of most of these illnesses. It's a big part of the mechanism of action. Actually, you can make a case that increase in circulation, that because you're raising your heart rate and you're pumping your blood many more times through your kidneys and liver, you can make a case that is one of the mechanisms that helps all of these things. Because that's what's happening when you exercise. You're increasing your circulation, you're causing vasodilation, you're strengthening your blood vessels, you're causing positive inotropy in the heart. I sounded smart when I said that.
Inotropy?
Yes.
What is an inotropy?
Okay. Inotropy is the efficiency of your heart. So a positive inotrope, for example, the herb hawthorn, is something that increases the efficiency of your heart. That is, it ultimately increases your ejection fraction. It makes it so that with each beat, your heart ejects more blood. Mm-hmm. So it's more efficient. It gets more blood out with each beat. So it doesn't have to beat as often because each beat is more efficient. Your heart just gets stronger. And so if your heart doesn't have to beat as often because it's stronger, then it'll last longer. So it's really good for the heart, exactly. So exercise is a positive inotrope. When you get regular exercise, your heart becomes more efficient because
makes sense.
Yes, you're working the heart muscle while you're exercising, and it's becoming more efficient because you're asking it to work harder to get that circulation through. And then when you're resting, it doesn't have to work as hard to get your circulation going when you're not exercising. So that's positive inotropy. And hawthorn is an herb that happens to be a positive inotrope. It strengthens your heart. It's a really benign, lovely herb that has that effect. So if you drink hawthorn tea or you take hawthorn solid extract and you have issues with your heart strength, hawthorn actually helps with that. And I have hawthorn solid extract and I take it. Because unfortunately, I've inherited my mommy's tendency towards worry and high blood pressure. So I have to keep an eye on that. And so here's another thing. If you have high blood pressure and it's because you're a nervous chalelia like me, if you have...
That's got to be Yiddish.
Yeah. Anyway, if you're... I was just reading about motherwort herb yesterday.
Okay.
And motherwort, that's my girl. That's my jam right now. Motherwort is... it's a lovely herb, and the big thing with motherwort. Now, motherwort, I know it's called motherwort, and the wort doesn't mean a wort growth on your hand. It's W-O-R-T. It means a plant. It's a plant for moms.
Right.
But you don't have to be a bio mom. You could be a stepmom, or you could be a mom to a bazillion patients, or a mom to whatever else you are taking care of, because motherwort is a great herb if you're in menopause. And it is an herb that will help to lower your blood pressure, especially if the blood pressure is as a result of nervous tension, that you're worried about a lot of things. And so it makes you tense and it gives you high blood pressure. That's me. That's who you're looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So motherwort is
You shouldn't worry so much.
Yeah. Good luck with that. What I need to do, guess what I need? Guess what would help me to not worry so much?
I know. We're back to sleep again.
Sleep and rest. And I don't necessarily have to be sleeping. Yeah, I just have to be doing restorative activities. And I don't feel like I have enough time, or perhaps I do not create enough time for restorative activities in my life. And so that is something I need to work on. It's the running your own business deal.
Yeah, I know.
And trying to get exercise. That's the thing. So so with breast cancer, what you're doing, as I said, you're sending the circulation through the liver and kidneys many more times. And in the liver, what happens to hormones as they go through? So if your liver needs to level out hormones, what it's going to do is it's going to assess how many hormones are coming through. And some of those hormones is going to say, all right, you don't need so much of this. I'm going to conjugate it. So conjugation is a process by which estrogen, which is a fat-soluble hormone, is made water-soluble. Once it's water-soluble, it can't really be used in the body anymore. So conjugation makes it so that the hormone is going to be dissolved in bile, and then it's going to be excreted. So you're going to wind up excreting that conjugated estrogen in your stool. If you don't wind up excreting it in your stool, it'll go into circulation, but because it's water soluble, that conjugated estrogen is going to go out through your urine. Yeah. So because you're sending the circulation so many more times through the liver and kidneys, you're going to get more conjugation happening, and your estrogen level is generally going to go down. So this is one of the mechanisms by which, if you have fibrocystic condition, that is, you have lumpy bumpies in your breast that are benign, that your doctor told you, yeah, you have lumps and bumps, but they are benign, they're just cysts. They are sensitive to estrogen, and you get more pain when premenstrually. If you find that if you do lots of physical activity, they get better, that's because you're lowering your relative estrogen level, and those tissues are sensitive to estrogen. You have less estrogen, the cysts go away, the cysts go down. It's kind of nice. And so getting all that physical activity is going to relatively lower your estrogen status. Women tend to be estrogen dominant. The reason for that is because when we ovulate, the second half of our cycle, the corpus luteum, which is the half of the follicle that is made when you ovulate, half of it becomes ovum or future potential baby, half of it becomes corpus luteum, sits in your ovary, makes progesterone for you. And progesterone's job is directly to say, okay, ovary, no more follicles. We are nulliper. We are only supposed to have one baby at a time. So no more follicles, please. And so it makes the other follicles that you could ovulate, and prevents you from having many babies at once. And so it is a anti-proliferative hormone. So it's very cool to have progesterone around. Having adequate progesterone is another mechanism by which you can prevent breast cancer. However, if you are under a lot of stress, progesterone, so nature really wants you to survive. So if you're going to survive, the species is either going to survive by you having more babies or by you running away from danger. So if you're in danger, we don't want you pregnant, because if you're pregnant, you can't run away from danger. So we're going to take progesterone, which is a hormone that supports pregnancy, and we're going to turn it into cortisol so you can run away from the bear, or run away from all those things you're doing at work, or run away from, or run, or just plain run. And yes, if you literally run or get too much cardiovascular exercise, you raise your progesterone will be turned into cortisol, and you will have a hard time conceiving. And we certainly see that people who overexercise, exercising excessively is a form of stress, and you will take progesterone and turn it into cortisol, and that's not necessarily a good thing. So having extra progesterone around is a good idea. And there's some thought that having extra progesterone around is preventative to breast cancer, because it is an anti-proliferative hormone. It can prevent the proliferation of cells. So having your estrogen and progesterone in balance is a good thing. So when you get physical activity, we're talking about 12 hours a week. We're not talking about 12 hours of full bore exercise. We're talking about sometimes you're working hard. A lot of the time you're not working so hard. I mean, the amount of time I spend working hard during the week is not really as much as the amount of time I spend just moving, doing an easy workout, you know, doing just walking from here to there. And in fact, when I'm doing intervals, if I'm doing an interval workout, most of that workout is not the hard part. Most of the workout is the rest part. I mean, you do your warm-up, which is not as hard as the interval part. Today I did 16 minutes of intervals, and the rest of it was warm-up and cool-down, and a lot of it was easy. And that's what you do, you know. If you go on a bike ride around here, you have hills. And yes, it's hard when you climb the hill, but then when you're descending, your heart rate goes way down, so you get to do intervals. And if every time, it's like Ron said, if every time you go out, you try to push it to the max or push it hard, that's not good for you. You know, if you did a hard effort one day, it's a good idea to do an easy effort the next day. And it's okay to take some days off, too. However, you know, again, I can't emphasize that leisure walks in nature, in terms of your 750 minutes a week, count, and they're very good for you. They help you to literally reduce your cortisol. Remember that cortisol is a catabolic hormone that breaks down tissue. And so being in catabolism is a bad thing. If you're in catabolism all the time, it's a bad thing. Being in catabolism sometimes is a good thing, but being in it all the time is not so good. So anyway, so breast cancer, it's all about the circulation, reducing the estrogen status and balancing out your hormones, so you are releasing, and probably not only releasing the excess estrogen that's in your body, but also you're sending any toxins that potentially could cause that could cause free radical damage, and that could cause changes to your genes, and also the xenoestrogens. You're getting rid of them. They're going through the liver and kidneys at a more rapid rate, and you're able to excrete them. Colon cancer. So it's going to be similar with colon cancer, increasing circulation to the entire body, including the digestive system. And so with colon cancer, there's toxins that can be that can promote colon cancer. So any toxins that you ingest, again, you're going to send them more rapidly through the liver and kidneys, and they're not going to be as available to the colon to cause cellular changes that are going to lead to cancer. There would also be, for colon cancer, there would also be an effect of regularizing the digestive system, that people who are constipated get help from they get help from getting regular exercise for being more regular. So if you're constipated and you find that when you get more exercise, it helps to stimulate your digestion, constipation is a risk factor for colon cancer.
Sure it is.
Why would that be? Very simply, that the stuff that's in your colon is supposed to come out.
It's toxic. It's supposed to come out, right.
And that's your liver literally sends bile that is loaded up with toxins that it's collected from your metabolism and that you've breathed in or eaten or otherwise gotten from the environment, literally sends it into your bile, and the bile is sent to your stool, so you're supposed to get rid of it. So if it's sitting in your colon and not coming out, then it's going to sit and it's going to be able to cause cellular changes. Also, if you don't digest well and you have food sitting in there, you get fermentation because you have bacteria in there, and you're going to get bacterial fermentation of substances in there. And so, like, for example, if you have animal protein in there, if you're not getting rid of the excess animal protein that made it into your colon, it can literally rot.
Ew.
And rotting is a specific thing. There are bacteria that eat the that eat the protein and make toxic chemicals that can cause free radical damage and change and cellular changes, and you can get colon cancer.
So you become a two-legged compost pile.
Kind of, sorta. Yeah. So yeah, exercise helps you. It helps you to be more regular.
You have to move to move.
Yeah.
How's that?
Do.
So
that would be one of the mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And so if you have daily elimination that's healthful, you're going to be less likely to get colon cancer. All of these illnesses benefit by the reduction in inflammation in general that's caused by exercise. So exercise causes some acute inflammation, but then in the long term, it tends to reduce inflammation. So the next one we'll bring up is diabetes. How does exercise prevent amount of exercise prevent diabetes? Well, we know too. Remember, there's another study that came out that said, if you go one day a week long, that's a big preventative for diabetes. So you try to encourage your patients, everybody, pick one day a week and go long. And the rate of, you know, activity doesn't matter. So you can go for a long walk, but you could stroll. But it should be an hour or two or more.
Right. Right.
You should spend one day a week at doing long physical activity, and only one day a week. So you pick the one day a week that you have off. It's easiest for you to do, and it doesn't have to be the same day every week. You just pick which day it's going to be, and you do it that day. And if you do that, you spend more time doing exercise. It helps to lower your risk of diabetes or improve already existing diabetes. Why? Because exercise improves insulin sensitivity, and it has to do that because when you're exercising, you want insulin to bond to your cells because insulin wants to hang out there and open up the cells to get sugar into the cells. So the cells have energy to do their electron transport chain. And so you increase insulin sensitivity. Now, insulin, if it's just floating around, minding its own business, is not bonded to cells. Insulin is a traffic director, and it will direct you to have more inflammation. And so if you have more inflammation, inflammation does cause free radical damage. And free radical damage, in the case of diabetes, can lead to cardiovascular disease. So the big thing about exercise and reducing diabetes is you have more efficient use of your sugar, and you have your cells becoming more sensitive to insulin and bonding better. And so that's how that happens. That's a really good thing. The other thing is diabetes puts you at risk for cardiovascular disease. And so when you're more insulin sensitive and you have less diabetes, you're less at risk for cardiovascular disease, which brings us to the next two, the ischemic heart disease and ischemic stroke. And those are both cardiovascular disease. It's just that one is damage to your heart and one is damage to your brain. And so, of course, exercise helps to prevent ischemic heart disease. So the more you move, the less likely you are. Why? So in very, very simple terms, move it or lose it. If you're right. using your circulatory system, you're going to exercise it. You're going to move right. blood through it. Your body's going to be more interested in keeping the passages open. So it's going to. But there are some specific ways that it does that. When your body senses that you're getting a lot of exercise, it's going to go, yo, Harry, we got to keep the pipes clear. Send down more HDL. Okay, Joe, sending it down. So the liver produces more HDL. What's HDL? High-density lipoprotein. High-density lipoprotein is... It's the trash collector of cholesterol. if you think of cholesterol as trash. Except that cholesterol is not trash. You shouldn't speak that way about cholesterol.
Right, because you need cholesterol.
You do. Right. However, we don't want it to be blocking up your arteries. So we're going to keep the cholesterol floating about. We're going to keep it large, buoyant, and floating about in your arteries and not sticking to them. So when you have more HDL, the good thing that it does is it goes around and collects up the cholesterol and keeps it from sticking to stuff.
Okay.
And so you don't have blocked arteries. And that the more you exercise, the more HDL you have around.
Which makes the HDL the good cholesterol.
Yes. And again, you know how people say the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol?
Right.
I don't believe in that.
Okay.
Those are simplistic terms and they're not really accurate. Because cholesterol, you know what would happen if you had no cholesterol in your body?
You would die.
Thank you.
Right.
Yes. I would die before even 1 minute went by. Yes.
Oh, my God. We're into show tunes.
That's from Take Me Along,
yes.
Which I was in.
Okay.
Yes. I just talked to Paul Liberti, who I was in Take Me Along with a long time ago.
Oh, that's good.
And I was Muriel McCumber, and I got to sing that song with him.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's why I know him. Okay. So, anyway, HDL.
Yes.
Right.
Keeps
the pipes clear.
Right.
And so you make more, the more you exercise, the more HDL you'll have around.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, and so, but cholesterol is very important. It's a precursor to all of your reproductive hormones and to cortisol. It's also part of all the cell membranes in your body. And so I am not a huge fan of statin drugs. Also, I just, in the last week, had a very nice gentleman come in who was slender, and he had had a heart attack, and he had low cholesterol. So it can happen.
Right.
So it has to do with...
there's a lot more factors involved.
Well, there's other factors,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
And so there's factors involved. And just because of your level of cholesterol won't necessarily tell the story. It can be the size and shape of your cholesterol. And whether you have free radical damage, there can be other factors.
Sure.
So I don't know those yet. But that can happen. So lowering cholesterol isn't necessarily a good thing. It depends on the situation. But exercise prevents ischemic heart disease because one of the mechanisms, as I said, is raising HDL. The other one is lowering triglycerides.
I was going to say, you're big on the triglyceride thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, triglycerides are the form that fat takes as it's floating around your blood. And it is available for use for energy. It's how your body packages fats. It's an early form of fat storage, and it's the fat form of fat storage that runs around in your blood. And you will use them for energy. If you get regular exercise, you will use your triglycerides. So you and I, Ron, when we check our triglycerides, we have low triglycerides that tend to run in the low to mid double digits. And people who don't exercise, if they're not quite elevated, they'll be in the low triple digits. And people who really have a problem, then you're getting above 150 and beyond. The thing with triglycerides is triglycerides are subject to free radical damage. And so the more they float around your blood, the more likely they are to be damaged. And when they get damaged, they cause free radical damage to your blood vessels. And once you have damage to your blood vessels, your body wants to repair them and blocks them up with platelets and cholesterol and calcium. Mm. And so when you have blockages, that's what your ischemic heart disease and ischemic stroke is. Ischemic heart disease means that you are creating blockages in the coronary arteries. The coronary arteries are the arteries that provide circulation to the heart. So, you know, all of your body needs blood, you know, because you need to do your gas exchange. You need to get energy. You need to get all the nutrients that that organ needs. And the heart muscle is no different. So it has its own blood supply. Even though the heart is supplying blood to the whole body, you have coronary arteries that supply the heart. And they can get easily blocked because they're very tiny. They're little narrow things. And they are the size of a piece of spaghetti. So they can get blocked. And they get blocked because if you're sending a lot of free radical stuff through them, again, they'll get blocked with platelets and calcium and cholesterol. And then once they're blocked, if they're partially blocked, and sometimes they constrict, you'll get ischemia to the heart. And so if they're not 100% blocked. So ischemia means you'll get intermittent restriction of blood flow to the heart muscle. And when you get in restriction of blood flow, you get pain. And that pain is usually called angina.
Ooh.
Right. And so if you have angina, the doctor won't necessarily want to do a bypass or put a stent in. They tend to wait until you've had an infarction. An infarction is where you actually have a blockage of the arteries. Now, sometimes they do. If they find that you have coronary arteries that are a certain percentage blocked, they will want to put a stent in. A stent in is when they put a tube in that opens up that artery again. It sort of mashes the cholesterol against the walls, and it opens it up. Stents can refill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
No, I
What's
know.
What's a stent made out of?
I'm not sure if
it's some probably, sort of a tissue or
no, it's probably made of plastic.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not that's a good question. What are stents made of? Find that out.
Maybe I'll find
I'm
that
not
out.
Sure. I want to say, you know, some kind of inert plastic, but I don't know. I doubt that they're metal because you're talking about conductive tissue, you know, that heart muscle and blood vessels have conduction going on, so it's probably got to be some kind of inert compound.
A coronary stent is a tiny expandable mesh tube made of medical grade stainless steel.
Oh, steel. Sorry.
Or
I guess it is metal.
Alloy metal.
Who
they
knew?
Are metal. They can aid in the reduction of recurrent blockage or narrowing after an angioplasty procedure.
Right.
So that's why they would fill back up again, because if they're mesh, then they're going to be able to allow things to build against them again. That seems
they can, yeah, they can. If you get a stent put in, you should also then go ahead and do all the things you need to do to prevent coronary artery disease. You know,
right,
figure out how
right.
you got there in the first place. And,
right. Well, it's usually
take care
a pretty
of the
good.
Lifestyle factors.
There's pretty good reason why people get there in the first
why
place.
Why they use but. What people usually do is they get put on many meds. They get put on blood thinners and they get put on cholesterol meds. And if their blood pressure is high, they get put on a blood pressure med.
There's a little more here. Stents are usually made of metal mesh, but sometimes they're made of a fabric. So
okay.
you can actually get them in a fabric also.
Yes.
So a little bit more going on there. Yeah, but apparently they have to be porous. That's why they're mesh.
Yeah.
So they have to be somehow porous too.
There's some kind of probably because you need communication with the. You don't want them to be just. You don't want to be them to be rigid because it's an artery and the artery has to pulse.
Right. So it's got to be able to expand and contract.
Yes.
Right.
That may be why. Yeah. So. Anyway, so exercise is going to help prevent that because you're sending HDL through and it's going to help keep the arteries clear. Again, you're detoxifying, so you're going to have less free radical damage or less free radicals in your body, and your liver and your kidneys are going to be able to detoxify those for you. If you eat really well, so if you eat a lot of good food, if you eat food that's high in antioxidants, like berries and cherries and lots of vegetables, you're going to get a lot of antioxidants in your food. And again, if you increase your circulation, you're going to send those through and they're going to be able to heal anything that's going on. Whereas if you eat a lot of inflammatory foods, you know, too much starch and sugar, too many preservatives, hydrogenated fat, you're going to be more subject to free radical damage. And you're going to be more subject to cardiovascular disease from eating too much starch and sugar, from eating an inflammatory diet. So that's how. So these are basic ways that exercise can prevent five big diseases: breast cancer, colon cancer, diabetes, ischemic heart disease, and ischemic stroke. That's pretty cool. So what this article says is you can achieve 3,000 MET minutes a week by incorporating different types of physical activity in the daily routine. Like I said before, climbing stairs 10 minutes, vacuuming 15 minutes, gardening 20 minutes, you know, running to the store, walking around the supermarket, you know, taking your kid for a walk, throwing a ball around with your kid, you know, taking the compost out.
Taking the dog for a walk.
Taking the dog for a walk. Yeah, having a dog, if you are able to have a dog, having a dog is good because dogs need to be taken out.
Take your neighbor's dog for a walk.
Take the neighbor's dog for a walk. That's right. Go volunteer at the shelter. Sure.
Sure.
That's a thing I should probably do because,
you know,
I like dogs.
Then you could still play with dogs.
Play with dogs because I like
dogs.
Not
have to own them and therefore have to worry about them when you go away for a weekend or whatever.
Yeah,
or work
I know.
Too late.
Work too late. That's the big one.
That would be
one.
The big one.
The working too late
That would be the
thing.
Big one. Sure.
Yes. So there you go. So there's a dose response relationship, 3,000 to 4,000 mets. So that, what did we say? That's like 750 to, I don't know, 850 minutes per week. Beyond 4,000 mets, there's not much more benefit. So if you're like, more is better, there's a cutoff. And in fact, it's a good idea to stay below the cutoff, because beyond, if you get too much exercise, that's not good either. When you get too much exercise, that's not good for your cardiovascular health. But then, well, you get into, are you getting enough rest?
Too much of everything, anything, is not good for you.
But
right?
Here specifically,
I mean, there's you got to look at balance.
That's right. But here specifically, we're talking about if you spend too much time exercising. Now you're getting into spending more time in cortisol. And when you spend more time in a cortisol bath, that's not good for you. That actually is detrimental. And that's detrimental to your immune system. And then you, because when you spend the time in that cortisol, you do produce free radical damage. So if you are going to exercise, it's really, really important to eat well and eat an anti-inflammatory diet, because you need to repair your body and nourish your body with what you depleted it of when you exercised. So eating foods with a lot of antioxidants in them, and those, the biggest foods with antioxidants in them are produce, good quality vegetables and fruit, and mostly the non-starchy ones. I mean, you're going to get some antioxidants in some starchy vegetables. So your sweet potatoes have beta carotene in them, and your squash have beta carotene in them. But your brightly colored vegetables, whatever they are, and your brightly colored fruits, the more color they have, the more antioxidants they have, because those are the bright colors are the colors of proanthocyanidins, which are great antioxidants, as well as your carotenoids. And then your chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is detoxifying as well. It helps to chelate minerals and get rid of heavy metals and things you shouldn't have in your body. So eating your produce is a really good idea. Eating clean protein and not too excess to help to rebuild the protein that you used. And then beyond that, and then essential fats. And you need the essential fats to rebuild your cells.
How come it always comes back to the same two things?
Diet and exercise.
Yeah.
All right. So very good.
I have a
good
question if you have time for it.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. We got a call from Teresa from Coventry. Shout out to Teresa. She loves the show. And she has a friend who works at the Yukon Dairy Bar, of all places.
All right.
Okay. And people come in with gluten allergies, and they are very particular about how they're served their ice cream, because obviously there's ice cream that is gluten-free, and then there's cookies and cream, which we're not going to talk about, or brownie, or any of the other ones that have any kind of wheat in them. So they'll be to the point where they will require them to open a new container of ice cream and use a fresh scoop so that there's no contaminants on the scoop. I told her it was a great question, because there was a time when I was doing, I still am doing, the gluten-free thing at home, and we were using two separate toaster ovens. What's the situation here? So let's say you scooped into a big batch of cookies and cream or chocolate brownie, okay, ice cream, and you served it to one customer. And then the next customer comes along, and they would like to have something that's gluten-free, and you wash the scoop, and then you should be able to dig into that. I don't see where there would be a contaminant on that scoop if the scoop was washed in between.
If you washed it really well, the only problem, it depends on what washing it really well is. So
right.
When you wash it, do you rinse it? Do you use soap?
Right. What, do you put it in the same bin
sponge?
Wherever all the other scoops went into,
right,
which might have gluten in the water?
That's right.
Right.
What sponge? And it's going to depend on how sensitive the person. If they have true celiac disease, it could be an issue. But if they have true celiac disease, and if they, you could use the 3-time rule. So if you have celiac disease and you've gone to the Yukon Dairy Bar and you've had a reaction, you might want to rethink going to the Yukon Dairy. I mean, no offense to the Yukon Dairy Bar.
Right.
The Yukon
or
Dairy
any
Bar,
other dairy bar.
That's right. And that's correct.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter where. If you've gone to an establishment and had a reaction, you may want to rethink going to that establishment, because the establishment may not be, usually most establishments are not dedicated gluten-free, unless they're D's One Smart Cookie or Divine Treasures.
Correct.
And so some places are dedicated gluten-free. And if you're dedicated gluten-free, generally you don't have to worry. However, if you're going to an establishment that is not a dedicated facility, you can ask them to do due diligence and rinse and wash. And again, rinsing and washing, as you said, they can be putting it in a bin of water that has other gluten-containing scoops.
That would be the problem right there.
So they would have to pull out the scoop and then wash it. And the sponge that they used is now going to have gluten on it because they're washing it off. So now that sponge is contaminated. So, so the thing is, it depends how sensitive you are. And what I tell all my patients, as I tell you, is if you're going to be eating out, and we want to tell people, if you want to eat out, try to eat out because you want to live.
Right.
We give you enzymes. We give you the enzymes with DPP-4 so that if you do get contaminated, you can take care of it. You can also choose not to eat out or only eat it at gluten-free establishments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can kind of see how this works, because if you took a gluten scoop and you scooped ice cream with it and then you put it into the bin of water, you know, the little thing of water that they put the ice cream scoops in, and it's in there with all these others, and then you were to take it out again, obviously you'd have some contaminant. Now, if you're just a fresh scoop, no big deal, but if someone else was scooping in there and had not done that, then any of the gluten-free ice cream could be a problem.
I had a Facebook friend yesterday. I had a Facebook friend yesterday say something about, ha-ha, this sunscreen is gluten-free. What? Gluten can't be absorbed through your skin.
Oh, yes, it can.
And I'm like, I had to post.
Yeah.
That's not true. If you're sensitive, it absolutely can be. If you're sensitive, I explained about dermatitis herpetiformis. And I explained about how people who are really gluten sensitive do have to have gluten-free cosmetics because it can cause inflammation. All right. So that was really interesting. So you're listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. It's been a pleasure to be here for the last hour for Radio Naturopath on this date, August 10th, 2016. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.